From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 325, Software-Defined Networks and Hyper-V, with guest Richard Hicks, recorded Tuesday, July 9th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm going to get right into it today because my guest is Richard Hicks, and he's a network and information security expert specializing in Microsoft technologies. As a four-time MVP, that's Microsoft Most Valuable Professional, he has traveled around the world speaking to network engineers, security administrators, and IT professionals about Microsoft Edge security and remote access solutions. Richard has nearly two decades of experience working in large-scale corporate and computing environments and has designed and deployed perimeter defense and secure remote access solutions for some of the largest companies in the world. And you can find him on Twitter at Richard Hicks and on the web at richardhicks.com. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. Good to be back.
And your bio reflects, I think, the conversations we've had in the past, which were very much on edge security and the various models of it. You're in a new role these days.
A little bit, yes. As we've talked about in the past, most of my experience comes as a network and information security expert. So secure internet access, secure remote access, managing business partner connectivity, those types of things, very much edge focused. And from a Microsoft perspective, a niche focus from the Microsoft point of view. Edge security and remote access, as you know, they've kind of de-emphasized in recent years. And I was very fortunate to hook on with a company recently called Iron Networks, based in the Silicon Valley in San Jose. And they have those solutions today. So they do have, Forefront TMG and UAG solutions for remote and for secure web access, remote access. We have some direct access products as well. But the nice thing about it is that they have some new and exciting products that are centered around the Microsoft private cloud stack. And so I've kind of dived headfirst into, core data center networking, and it's been pretty exciting taking some of the things that I've learned from networking on the edge and bringing those into the core.
Now, I got to tell you, for most IT professionals, the idea of networking being exciting is crazy talk. I take the cable, I plug it in. Sometimes I make a VLAN.
That's correct. And you're absolutely right. But the world is changing, Richard. And this is very interesting because you bring up an interesting point. And we're going to talk today about software-defined networking at a high level. But one of the challenges that I see going forward, and I think it'll become readily apparent after our conversation today, is that the IT pro and the system administrator are going to have to know networking much more in depth than they do today, because it's going to become part of their jobs.
Now, on one hand, software-defined networking sounds awesome, because that just means everything is software. I don't have to physically move cables around. Like, this sounds like a great thing, but at the same time, pretty frightening too. Like, it's bad enough to manage multiple VLANs within a switch and just trying to keep in your head how those things go together. And Now you're talking about going even further than that.
Yes. And again, you're right. It does sound potentially daunting, but I think once you unlock the potential that SDN realizes, that ramping up on those skills and adding those to your toolbox will be not only essential, but it's going to be vital to enabling the vision of the modern data center, the software-defined data center, if you will.
Okay, so let's get into definitions and what this actually means.
Sure.
Like we basically, I think we all here have a grasp on networking.
Sure.
So now, if it's really software-defined, how do you do that? What does it really mean?
So we're throwing some buzzwords around. Software-defined networking, or SDN as it's often referred to, really is nothing more than network virtualization. It is fundamentally and conceptually the same idea and constructs that we use for server virtualization, except we're applying it to the network. So today, server virtualization, right? You would agree that it's quite ubiquitous.
Oh, yeah.
We take a piece of hardware. It has a handful of CPUs. a bunch of cores. It has memory and it has storage, you know, and so forth, whether it's direct attached or network attached, what have you. The bottom line is you have a pool of resources for which we lay down a hypervisor, and then we divvy that up and assign virtual machines to that. So we have a group of virtual machines, maybe it's 20 or 30 virtual machines on a host, right? So you have 20 or 30 guests on a single host.
Right.
For all intent and purpose, the virtual machines think that they are running on a discrete computer,
right,
on a discrete system. We're going to take those principles and apply that to the network. So today we have a network that is generally configured with virtual LANs or VLANs, and that's a common construct that we use today to create isolated network segments. We have IP routing, and we have subnetting, and we have the hierarchical subnetting and so forth. And all of that's very standard and well defined. The problem is that it is extremely inflexible.
Mm-hmm.
And so in today's in today's world, we can provision a virtual machine in a matter of minutes, right?
Right.
So we can do that very quickly and easily. However, if I need a new network for that virtual machine, what happens? I need to call the network guys. I need to put in change management. They need to create new VLANs. They have to go touch my top of rack switches, my access switches, my distribution switches, potentially my core switches, assigning all of these VLANs, and it becomes very rigid, very inflexible. It's difficult and time consuming to do those things. Very error prone. I mean, somebody does the wrong thing on a switch, introduces a bridging loop, brings down the whole data center, right? I mean, there is potentially fraught with, peril there. And so a lot of challenges. But the biggest problem, Richard, is the fact that it really inhibits the dynamic data center that we're trying to get to. I want to be able to spin up a virtual machine. I might need a new VM network for it, but now I'm locked into my physical network infrastructure. And although I can deploy the VM in minutes, it might take days, weeks, maybe even months, depending on your organization,
to get the
network set up for that. And so it really kind of impedes that progress that we've made. To me, it's interesting because I go back to the days when virtualization was still very immature, and we had this problem with storage. So I was getting really good with the server virtualization, but now my storage was getting in the way.
Right.
And then SANs became popular, right? So now I can just, call up the SAN administrators or even do some self-service provisioning there and say, hey, I need a LUN with this much storage, and boom, I've got it, and I've automated that process. We've lagged behind with the networking components to that, and it's really causing us some serious problems. And I think one of the biggest challenges, there's two real challenges there, and I think one of the biggest ones is the inflexibility. So I, as the systems administrator, have to be aware when I am doing, for example, a live migration in Hyper-V, I can't move that VM wherever I want.
Right.
I have to be mindful of the underlying network infrastructure, because if I take a virtual machine and I move it from one host to another host that happens to be on a different subnet, I have to realize that either I'm going to cut that virtual machine off because now it has the wrong IP address assigned to it, or I need to change the IP address of that virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that, changing an IP address is trivial, right? I mean, that we
Not
can
a big
even
deal.
Automate that and introduce that to some, form of orchestration, automate it with PowerShell. System Center does it as well.
Mm-hmm.
We can address that. The problem becomes an operational issue, right? So often these applications that we're moving, that are running on these virtual machines are part of a multi-tier infrastructure. They have other resources that talk to them. If they are talking to them via their hard-coded static IPv4 address, we might have to make changes to the application. There are some other challenges there also, in terms of things like access policies. There are some real challenges there. Firewall rules. If there's any IPsec security associations involved with that, all of those things are going to change. Even things as simple as name resolution. We could, even in a perfect world, if we were talking to this machine via name and we automated the process of moving it to a different subnet and updating DNS instantly.
Right.
There are always DNS caches. What was the time to live
there
on that?
There is no instance
record
with DNS. It's not instant. It's eventual.
It is eventual, right? Even in the best circumstances.
Yes.
But the best circumstances aren't always available to us. There are always times when somebody's cache doesn't get updated. Somebody's put it in a host file. Somebody's talking to it via static IP before. So you can see the challenges there. I might have to go update my firewall policies, my IPS rules. There are all kinds of challenges that that come along with that. Now, network virtualization or software-defined networking basically alleviates that because it allows me to move my workloads within the data center without regard to the underlying network. And it does that using, again, SDN, software-defined networking, or network virtualization. So what I am fundamentally doing is I am building a virtual network on top of my physical network in exactly the same fashion I build a virtual machine on a physical machine,
right,
or a virtual LUN or a virtual disk on a pool of disk resources on a SAN.
But and that makes it's a natural progression then. This is all part of dealing with exactly the same issue of being able to shift those workloads around freely and define stuff
Absolutely.
As you need to go.
Absolutely. So, you know, we you know, created server virtualization and it was awesome. And then the storage was holding us back. So
yep.
those technologies matured. And now all of a sudden, you know, we say, hey, listen, you know, I would really like to move this VM to a different data center. And there's a different IPv4 subnet there.
Right.
How can I do this a little more flexibly? And that's where SDN comes in. And SDN, as it's, you know, in my experiences with the Microsoft implementation of SDN, so I'll set that expectation level for you now.
Sure.
Is done through Hyper-V, and so the components that we use are the Hyper-V virtual network interfaces, so the VNICs, and the Hyper-V extensible switch, or the V-switch is sometimes as it's called, and that's really our data plane. And then the control plane is defined through System Center 2012 Virtual Machine Manager, or SCVMM, Service Pack 1. So in Service Pack 1 of SCVMM, Microsoft introduced something called virtual networking. And in SCVMM, what you do as the administrator is you will define your logical networks, and your logical networks do nothing more than map your physical network. So you're telling it these hosts reside on these subnets.
Right.
This data center is this subnet and so forth and whatnot. And then when you create your virtual machines and you instantiate a virtual network, then you define those, and ultimately it's an overlay. So it's a transparent overlay to the physical network. And so those virtual machines, I might have two virtual machines in a virtual subnet that could be in two different data centers on opposite sides of the world for all intent and purpose. They might be 10 or 15 hops away from each other, but they think they're on the same physical subnet.
So they can't tell, and that's the whole point. It's this abstraction of you don't need to know what hardware you're actually using.
Don't need to know, don't even care. All I need to know is that the control plane understands where everything is and manages that. So
right.
the magic really is in System Center Virtual Machines Manager. So what happens is, let's say I have a Hyper-V cluster, and I have two guests in that cluster, and they are on a virtual network. And I take one of those nodes and I move it across to a VM host that's running on a different subnet. What's going to happen is that I'm going to initiate that move in System Center. System Center, since it understands the physical network as well as the virtual network,
mm-hmm.
will move that workload and update the Hyper-V hosts so that they understand where all of these workloads reside. And so what's going to happen is that the virtual machine that got live migrated to a different subnet is going to attempt to communicate on the same layer 2 VLAN, right, or on the layer 2 subnet,
right,
to another host that happens to be on a, you know, in a remote data center. And what's going to happen is it's going to, that traffic, when it hits the Hyper-V switch, because again, to just kind of draw this picture, the virtual machine has a virtual NIC assigned to it.
Yep.
That virtual NIC is assigned to the virtual switch. The virtual switch gets that traffic and it says, okay, this particular host that you are attempting to talk to actually doesn't reside on this host. It resides on a different host in a different data center, in a different subnet. So what it's going to do is it's going to encapsulate that IP traffic. It's going to encapsulate it in something that's called an NVGRE tunnel. So NVGRE is network virtualization over generic routing encapsulation. And so NVGRE will encapsulate that and it will deliver it to the proper Hyper-V host, where it gets de-encapsulated on the switch and sent to the guest VM. So the guest VMs think they're on the same physical switch for all intent and purpose, right? But we may have routed that over our underlying infrastructure. So that's fundamentally how Microsoft has implemented SDN in System Center and Hyper-V.
So effectively, the network layout or the network addresses within those VMs have nothing to do with the physical addresses of the hardware at all.
That's correct. They don't even have to be unique. They could actually be overlapping.
Sure.
They could be overlapping per what's known as tenant or customer. So one of the things, and of course, you've had this discussion with previous guests on your show, Microsoft, everything that's in this operating system, Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2, comes from lessons learned in Azure.
Right.
And in Azure, of course, Microsoft has a vast number of customers. And with those customers, they can't always guarantee that everybody's using, discrete and unique subnets, right?
Sure.
They have to be able to handle that. I'm going to be running 10.0.0/8 in my cloud. You might be as well,
right,
in your Azure cloud as well. They have to be able to handle that.
Yeah.
All of that's baked into Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2 and System Center, and so it handles that. So I can create multiple virtual subnets, right? And I can assign those what's known as tenants or customer addresses, tenant IDs. And within those tenant IDs, you can do whatever you want. So I could be one tenant on the cloud and have my space. You could be another tenant on the cloud using the same exact IPv4 address space or IPv6 address space even, and we would coexist happily. And the virtual, the virtual machines, my virtual machines wouldn't be able to talk to yours. You wouldn't be able to talk to mine. They'd be totally isolated and separated. So, from a hosting aspect. So if you were attempting to build an IaaS solution, so an infrastructure as a service solution using Microsoft technologies, this kind of network isolation provides that isolated multi-tenancy that you would require to be able to resell these services to your customers.
Yeah, and you get to the real point here, which is it doesn't matter what people should do, it's what's going to happen.
Absolutely.
You just can't count on anything else. So your physical network can be carefully mapped out and properly routed and so forth, but what happens inside of the VMs has to stay within the VMs.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. So when I'm talking to customers about this, they tend to kind of glaze over this and go, okay, this is all really great and well and fine, but ultimately I'm happy with what I have here. I'm not a hoster, right? I'm an enterprise.
Right.
Why? I don't need multi-tenancy. I really don't need that. I'm not building out a cloud to lease to my customers. I would say you're probably being short-sighted. So I come from a very large enterprise networking background, and I can tell you that we had if I were still working there, we would have an absolute need for this. And,
sure.
And really it centers around building out multiple and physical or multiple virtual environments for the purposes of isolation, for example, test, dev, and QA.
Yeah.
We had 4 or 5 environments per system or application. So you had to have a test, you had to have a dev, you had to have several QAs, and those types of things, right? And they all had to be separate and isolated. And doing that with VLANs was a real challenge. Now, if I can do it with just virtual networking, I don't even have to have, separate IP, subnets. I can use the same IP semantics as I do in test, in dev, in QA, or even mirror the same IP subnets that I use in production. And since they're totally and completely isolated, I have the ability to run those networks in confidence and know I'm not going to have IP address conflicts or challenges like that.
Right.
So that's extremely, extremely powerful. There might be scenarios in which I need, perhaps I have very sensitive data or applications or information that I want to make sure is completely segregated from my production subnet. I can do that. There's a lot of, test labs. I mean, test labs are great. I'm sure I'm not the only administrator in the world who has ever accidentally brought up a service on a production network because he had the cable in the wrong switch.
Yep. Been there.
Been there, done that.
Oh, heck, remember the old days of TechEd when somebody would run an early VM with a DHCP on it and start handing out wrong addresses to people? We've been there.
I'm guilty, not at TechEd. I did it on a production network for a company that I worked with.
Awesome.
And, fortunately, it was early in the morning, and I was actually doing end-user support. It was very early in my IT career. I believe I was actually studying for my Windows 2000 MCSE at the time. And hey, you know, I had my lab there built out and I had a DHCP server, and darn it if I didn't have a cable in the wrong switch, and which was on the production LAN, and all of a sudden, boom, I was handing out 192.168 addresses to people, and they were having problems. So yeah, been there, done that. But and then, you know, the multi-tenancy, even if you're not a host or if you're just an enterprise, there might be some need for that as well.
You know, I also think it starting to think more and more in this idea that all of these major applications not only run across have multiple versions of themselves, whether they're dev or QA or production, but they run across so many different machines. When you need to start treating the application as a whole, giving it a block of addresses to itself that no matter where it goes or what it does, that's fine. You know, that's a real, and but sometimes the provisioning has to change. I need a couple more instances, anything like that. This kind of virtualization just is essential. You need that protection because you need the flexibility.
Correct. And it really, we get back to the rigidity and the inflexibility that our physical networks impose today. They are just not as dynamic as our virtualized technologies. And ultimately, you know, we've come to a point in time where we need to virtualize it to get the same benefits that we got out of server virtualization and LAN virtualization and SAN virtualization or storage virtualization as well. And I think, you know, going back to, you know, the physical limitations of VLANs and physical networking, it's important to understand that VLANs have a hard limit of around 4,000 VLANs.
Right.
So you have some real constraints there. Now, for an enterprise to say, you know, we're going to need more than 4,000 networks, I think probably some of the very largest companies in the world may encounter some challenges there. But I think for the vast majority of companies,
that's probably not
a big deal. But certainly if you're a hosting provider, you are going to want to have more than 4,000 customers.
Yeah.
I can tell you Microsoft probably has more than 4,000 customers in Azure today, right?
Sure.
And not only that, at TechEd this year, I learned that Microsoft makes something like 50,000 changes to the network per day in Azure. There's absolutely no way in the world we could do that using the VLAN construct. Can you imagine having to do VLANs on all of those switches in your data center every time you wanted a new VLAN? There's even if you could automate that, there's no way that would be scalable. It would just be absolutely atrocious.
I also appreciate, you know, in some ways, as a network guy, as a guy who cares about the physical infrastructure of network and connecting things together, removing the virtual workload from my mind space, essentially, creating that separation actually makes my job easier. Now, I build the network as efficiently as I can. I don't have to account for a given app near as much.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge to me then is all of the problems that happen when we started virtualizing PCs. How do I know I'm saturating a NIC? you know, just the same way that I used to bury a machine.
Sure.
You know, now there's instrumentation problems. And then how do I shift a workload if I am burying a NIC?
Absolutely. But this is the natural order and the natural progression of things, right? So these are the things that IT pros and system administrators are going to have to skill up on, right? So when virtual machines started coming out, we struggled with that. How do I know? I'm looking at performance monitor statistics for my virtual machine. It says it's fine, but I have horrible performance.
Yeah.
Well, you don't realize that, okay, well, there's, you know, 10 machines running on this particular host, and I need to look at different counters, or I need to look at different measurements to understand those things. That sort of thing is going to have to happen in the virtual world and in the virtual networking world. So there's a lot of things that we struggle with today. So network captures, right? So if I'm capturing traffic, how do I know this is the virtual network or the physical network? Is it encapsulated? Is this the de-encapsulated packet? Those types of things. Now, the instrumentation's evolving, and of course, it's certainly better in Windows Server 2012 R2.
Mm-hmm.
We had some real challenges with some of the virtual networking visibility and the granularity with which you could get into some of those things in Server 2012. But in Server 2012 R2, they've made improvements. There has been, another challenge that we face with this encapsulated traffic is that at the network level, at the physical network level, we like to do things like spread load, use things like ECMP, equal cost, multipath routing. The problem is that they rely on data that is in what's known as the inner frame. which is encapsulated
right.
with NVGRE. And so the encapsulated traffic appears to be host-to-host traffic. It appears to be one flow.
Right.
And so our networking traffic says, okay, well, you're going from here to there. That's great. But it might be going to a dozen different machines inside of that NVGRE tunnel. And so, you know, networking equipment is going to have to evolve. And of course, our instrumentation and our tools. You're familiar with the Microsoft Message Analyzer. That's the replacement for the network monitor. That actually supports looking into or being able to peer into the encapsulated NVGRE encapsulated traffic. So if you're using those tools, if you're looking at it with Wireshark, you're probably not going to be able to see that today. But certainly, if you upgrade to the Message Analyzer, you will be able to look at those things. So, some of the PowerShell commands have been updated so that we can now ping an address in the customer address space. So mm-hmm. that would be like the customer's own addressing, not the addressing in the virtual network as opposed to the physical network, so that administrators can say, hey, listen, I have access to the host, but I also can ping your guest in the virtual machine so that I know, hey, you do have access, and it must be an application issue or must be some other issue in the virtual network infrastructure as opposed to the low-level physical network infrastructure.
Yeah, and that, I mean, therein lies part of the challenge, right, is knowing who's responsible for what and where those impacts actually lie. I'm having application performance problems. Well, from the application's perspective, you can't see that you're going out over a slow WAN link. Like,
sure.
That's just invisible to you.
Yes, and again, since we're abstracting the physical network from the virtual network, underlying physical network problems can attribute to those, right? And so I might move a VM, let's say I migrate it, and all of a sudden performance goes in the toilet.
Sure.
It may actually be, you know, maybe it's not a, you know, there's a potential it could be an issue at the virtual network level. Maybe I put it on a host that was really saturated. They had a bunch of other VMs that were already very heavily loaded.
Yeah.
So that might be the problem. Or there might be an issue with the physical network infrastructure. I'm on a physical network that's highly saturated. You know, it's not uncommon to oversubscribe those services. And if I land a guest workload in an environment where there are other determining factors, you're right. That can be a real challenge.
Yeah. I mean, just understanding what's the least strained infrastructure, I mean, the best place to put something, that's not mm-hmm. easy either.
And this is kind of taking the conversation even a step higher. I think that potentially we could write logic into the control plane,
mm-hmm.
right, in the system center and in using orchestration to say, I want to move a workload, but I want to look at my underlying physical infrastructure and determine where is the best place to locate this virtual workload.
Right.
Depending on maybe those factors. Maybe I don't want to send it to this particular cluster or this node in this node in this data center or in this rack because I have some streaming video servers in that, you know, particular on that particular host. So this is a highly network intensive application as well. Don't put it there, put it someplace else.
Yeah, you're really expanding the concept of a manifest here. I agree with you. I often know that I want a workload out of a particular place, but I rarely know where it should go. So this idea that I could provide a manifest to an infrastructure and say, find a good home for this.
Yep.
Because you're typically talking about moving a whole batch of VMs with particular networking needs and storage needs and so forth. It's just not that easy to move it.
You're absolutely right. They don't often move in isolation. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, the idea of the manifest just gets larger and larger and larger under these constraints. You just start to see, mm-hmm. I need to describe an awful lot of information for you to really know what's going on.
No question. And this is interesting, and this goes back to a conversation that I have with people who, I call them the sky is falling type, who think that the cloud is going to replace them and that there's not going to be need for administrators anymore and that you're going to have these massive data centers managed by like two system admins. I think that that's the farthest thing from the truth.
Yeah.
All of the things that we're talking about today require a supreme amount of intelligence. They really require experience, knowledge, deep skill sets, deep expertise. And not only that, I think the expertise and the domain of expertise is expanding. You know, again, today, if you're a good Windows systems administrator, you probably have to understand virtualization. You have to understand, you know, VMware and Hyper-V and those types of things. Now, since we're getting into this SDN phase, you're going to have to understand networking. And I think that makes us more valuable. And ultimately, I think it's going to provide more work rather than less because, I think that this dynamic modern data center is going to require more minds than less, I think.
Well, and we're just doing more, right? I mean, I've always laughed at this idea that we're going to be rendered obsolete because I keep looking at the backlog. And the backlog's only getting bigger. Like, I'm excited to offload tedious stuff I've done before. You know, just to be able to get rid of that stuff, automate it, get it so we can work on the next layer of stuff and the next layer of stuff that's waiting to be worked on.
You're absolutely right. Nobody wants to be the tape jockey, right? I remember doing that job many, many years ago. We've evolved so much from the days of application per server, right? So
yeah.
Bringing an application online meant bringing a server online, sticking it in the rack, putting the drives and the RAM and the controller and building it, laying down the OS and the management agents and then the application and then monitoring it from there. We've evolved so much from that. And again, software-defined networking is just that next phase of evolution, right? So I think that, systems administrators today are going to have to skill up on networking. They're going to have to understand that at a much deeper level than they do today in order to be relevant in the future, because this is the network has become the roadblock. It is the storage, the equivalent of the storage roadblock that we had, 5 to 7 years ago.
Right.
When, we didn't have that flexibility. We resolved that problem and then, we've moved on to this.
To the next problem.
Before we wrap up our conversation today, there's another point that I wanted to make about going back to virtual networking. One of the shortcomings to at least Microsoft's SDN implementation today is that virtual networks can't talk to physical networks.
Huh.
I don't know. There's a lot of people that don't realize that. I talk to customers on a daily basis, and they're like, this is awesome. I built this virtual network, and I put some VMs there, but I can't join the domain. Well, how come they can't talk to my domain controller? And the question becomes, well, where is your domain controller? It's on the physical network.
Right.
Okay, so you can't. They don't talk. So this is I don't know if it's a bit of a shortcoming or a hindsight or what have you, but ultimately there is no capability for virtual networks to talk to physical networks because that encapsulation is done in the Hyper-V virtual switch. So today that's addressed by using what's known as an NVGRE gateway. And that gateway is available through third parties, although technically you could build your own. Third parties are the ones that have developed those, at least in Windows Server 2012. So the company I work for, Iron Networks, does have an NVGRE gateway, and there's a number of our competitors that have them as well. But if you want your virtual networks to be able to talk to resources on the physical network, you will need that gateway. And that gateway performs that translation. So remember, we have this encapsulated traffic, which is NVGRE encapsulated. We need to be able to de-encapsulate that and drop that onto the physical network, and that gateway is required to do that, just as an FYI. Also, in addition, the gateways, the Iron Networks gateway does, and I'm sure others will do this as well, they also support site-to-site VPN, so if you want to onboard customers over the network, over the internet, you can certainly do that. We've had customers use the site-to-site VPN capabilities to bridge their virtual networks with Windows Azure, or another hosting provider as well, even the internet. And so, just as a level set, in Windows Server 2012, you do have to acquire one of these gateways, usually from a third party. Now, in Windows Server 2012 R2, which is going to come out less than a year after Server 2012.
Yeah, that was just announced at TechEd, right? So
that's correct.
Just a few weeks ago, and they said they'd ship in 2013. They haven't given a hard date yet.
We are moving at light speed with this.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. So Microsoft now, and this is funny because after companies like Iron Networks, my employer, have spent quite a bit of time building out this infrastructure to support this gateway technology, Microsoft comes out and says, by the way, Server 2012 R2 will include an inbox gateway.
Right.
So they're actually going to include that functionality. So it wasn't quite ready for prime time, apparently, in Server 2012. Server 2012 R2 will include that gateway. So that is a role that you can deploy on your network to bridge your virtual networks with your physical networks.
Because that doesn't seem like a hard problem. It ought to just work.
Agreed. I think that I think it was really, really more in the implementation.
Right.
Developing a solution that would provide that sort of gateway technology and doing so in a secure, isolated, multi-tenant fashion was probably just a little overwhelming to do, at least in the first rev. So I think when they announced the virtualization, I at some point you have to ship a product, right? And I think that Microsoft does that incrementally. So they deployed network virtualization,
right?
Get customers used to that technology and adopting it. And there's the shortcoming of the gateway, but we have a way to address that with third parties. And then ultimately we'll catch up and we'll build something in box. Microsoft is always, in working for a Microsoft OEM partner has always been interesting because they do tend to want to try to put you out of business sometimes. It's an interesting relationship.
Yeah, you are dancing with an elephant and it really doesn't know when it steps on you.
Right. We are a partner and we're competing. So, you know, we've built this really cool solution and then they come out and say, well, yeah, we're going to put it in the box. So at the end of the day, you know, the third parties like Iron Networks and others do have some value added in their appliances. So our next appliance version of our gateway will be built on Windows Server 2012 R2. It will include the new capabilities that are built into that. So they have some new features and a little different way as far as the underhood mechanics of how they're providing that multi-tenancy for the gateway is a little bit different architecturally. And we're going to take advantage of that. The nice thing about our solution is that it will, of course, you know, include things dedicated hardware, specialized hardware to do, for example, the NVGRE task offload, which is really essential. One of the things that our appliances will do is they'll get in and we'll take that NVGRE encapsulated traffic, de-encapsulate it in hardware, which is much more efficient in terms of memory and CPU utilization. But that also allows us to get to that inner frame, and then we can do the thing types of things that we do on any other enterprise network, which is, you know, our load balancing and our traffic distribution. A lot of the offloads that we take advantage of on a traditional physical network today, large send offload and IPsec task offload and those types of things. So I think at the end of the day we'll have a good solution, but just wanted to be real clear on what was the capabilities were of virtual networking Server 2012, what those look like in Server 2012 R2. And, you know, honestly, and this is something we talked about earlier, is that, you know, we're moving at the speed of light these days, and I would expect that this is going to be the new normal. I think that Microsoft is learning so much from their cloud infrastructure that they want to get that into their operating system, and this really is the cloud operating system now. They want to get that into their customers' hands as soon as possible.
Sure.
I would not be surprised if we're going to see, you know, yearly updates to the operating system now.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see quarterly updates, you know, that they're doing that over the dev side too.
So. And I think I heard the phrase the new normal. I think Brad Anderson used that. I think that's what we're going to see.
Yeah. In some ways it's easier because we stop having these big jumps. It's going to be incremental changes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, it's going to be interesting. Hey, Rich, it's always fun to talk to you. I appreciate your insight into how all this stuff's moving forward. I would ask for a call out to, you know, what happens next, but it's like, this is happening. This is the way network's going. If you're going to continue to use the product, you're going to have more and more experience with this.
This is the wave of the future. I think that we're going to have to prepare ourselves for, updates that are going to come out much more frequently on a much more regular basis, much more shorter release cycles. And again, this is something that we're going to have to deal with. I think that we're moving quickly and we're going to have to keep up. Ultimately, that's going to be the way of the world. But thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, Richard.
You
always
bet.
Great to talk with you.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.